Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Through the Keyhole. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, coming to you live tonight from Rochester, New York, via the Paranormal Radio Network. We are also airing live on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. For more information on the show and my guests, visit our website at www.keyholepublishing.com. Thanks for joining me this evening. As always, I want to hear from you. If you're listening live, join us on the message board to discuss the program and add your questions and comments. Go to ParanormalRadioNetwork.com to join us in the virtual auditorium, where you can participate in the conversation through instant messaging. Or you can email me with your questions and comments. My email address is kdolan@rochester.rr.com. You can also call into the show anytime, toll-free, at 1-877-786-0562. And if you missed any of that, it's all on the webpage at www.keyholepublishing.com. My guest today is Stephen Bassett, political activist who is going to be putting on the well-known X conference in a few weeks. Steve, thanks for joining me tonight.
Karen, it's always great to be with you.
Hey. So, Steve, boy, I hardly know where to begin. We do have a lot to talk about tonight. First of all, it was great seeing you at the UFO conference last week, the UFO Congress.
Absolutely, and I would like, if I may, to be the first person to congratulate you on the air for being appointed to the board of the International UFO Congress.
Thank you. I wasn't leading up to that, but thank you very much. I'm really excited about that.
I think it's a very, very cool thing, and I know you're going to be a great asset to them. The conference went very well this year. Nicole Brown has really stepped up into her mom's shoes and is just doing a tremendous job adding to the conference.
We found out that she's a really terrific speaker, too. She got up on stage.
She's a natural.
She was fantastic.
She's a natural, and it's really coming to her. She's doing other things for the conference. So the event, they had even greater turnout this year, which I think is quite a feat, given that the economy has been very tough on a lot of people. So the event was very good, and the energy level at the conference was extremely high, and people were having a great time. I really enjoyed my entire week there.
Yeah, me too. And I was really glad to see you there. Even though you didn't speak there, it was really fun seeing you and being able to talk with you a little bit about the X conference. For any of our listeners who are not familiar with your X conference, it's held just outside Washington, D.C. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the next major conference is the Aztec conference, of course, which is the week before mine. I think it's like April 10th. And then, you'll have to help me. I forget where the Aztec conference is, but I know, or is it Ozark? If I got it wrong, it's the Ozark conference.
The Ozark
conference
is the weekend before yours, and that's in Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
In Eureka Springs, yes. And then after that is the X conference. It's X conference 2009. It's our fifth one, April 17 to 19. It's at the Gaithersburg Hilton, as it has been. And, registrations are being taken at the main website, x-conference.com, x-conference.com.
And there is a link to that on the Keyhole Publishing site as well.
Sure. As most people probably know by now, the X-Conference stands for Exopolitics Expo. All right. And so the conference, I think, was the first one to deliberately attempt to distinguish content and the people coming into this area or channel into the area of exopolitics. Not that there isn't some phenomenology there is, but exopolitics clearly gets the emphasis. And of course, by exopolitics, I mean the issues surrounding the government's policies and actions and the issues with respect to ending this the truth embargo, which is, of course, the ultimate, as far as I'm concerned, the ultimate focus of all this. I mean, it has to go somewhere, right? We just can't simply be looking at lights in the sky for the next 1,000 years. And bring in witnesses. And so it's the real first conference to do that, and I'm very proud of that, and we're still that way. And each time we try to add some aspect to it, usually related to what's going on in the news, and it's all done as an advocacy maneuver. In other words, some people don't understand this, but when I put the conference together, I'm looking at what's going on. I'm calculating where the pressure points are and what's happening in the news. And I'm trying to create a conference that will, in fact, advocate for the issue, put a little pressure on the politicians, which, of course, is why the conference is held just outside of Washington and is always going to be held there. Because the decision about the UFO-ET issue will be resolved there, not in some laboratory in Los Alamos, but it will be solved in Roswell, Washington by a policy change, unless, of course, another nation steps up and makes a major move there. So the Exopolitics Conference is about the advocacy work first and foremost. It's not about trying to create the ultimate event, the ultimate ufology event, certainly. It's not about making money, Lord knows, because it has yet to make any money.
Most of these conferences
really
hope
people will come
money.
To support that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I gave up that idea a long time ago. But we are excited about this year, Karen. Naturally, Richard will be there. He's been at every one, and he will always be at the FutureX conferences. I've always viewed Richard's work, and Richard himself, as kind of like an anchor of this this time. I think if you look back in time into the era of ufology, when the fundamental research and looking at the evidence and trying to create the best picture of it, I think in those days, I mean, Stan Friedman was the anchor, I think, for a long, long time. But we're in a new era now. And for me, Richard represents this anchor with his fundamental historical research and the books that he is working on. So he will be presenting about his second book, Volume 2 of UFOs in the National Security State. But our featured speakers, I guess you could say the special presentation speakers, it's quite an unusual lineup. We have, first and foremost, Edgar Mitchell is coming back, not to do the keynote. Last time he did the keynote, which is wonderful, but this time he's coming back to give a full lecture, 90 minutes.
Wow. On what topic?
30 minutes of which, 30 minutes will be Q&A, and he's going to be discussing his entire experience with the UFO-ET issue in his life. Going back to Roswell, where he was born, going back, and then, of course, his fundamental story is not changed, but when he started talking about it, of course, people approached him. He had media interactions. He's recently had a major news cycle. He'll be talking about all of that, and also, I think, giving his views on the disclosure process and what we ought to do, and maybe even on the post-disclosure world. This is, I really think, the first time he's ever given a full comprehensive lecture on this. And that will be on Sunday. In fact, the schedule is up on the site now. All the speakers have been slotted in. And you can go to x-conference.com and you can see who's speaking when. So Edgar, I really am pleased that he has honored us with his presence for 2 years in a row now. And then, of course, we have George Norrie, who has been a great supporter of at least the efforts to get the truth of this matter. And he's been a supporter of PR. He was there last year, and he's coming back for another two-hour presentation.
Wow.
By the way, this year, all the special presentations, they're all part of the day passes. There's no extra charges. If you're signed up for that day, you could go. But George will be coming back. He's going to do a little bit more serious, a little more extensive. He's bringing a lot of clips from previous shows, and he's going to be talking about those, as well as, talking to his fans and autographs and all that kind of stuff. I think it'll be a little different than last year, but again, a full 2 hours with George.
Wow.
And then I'm very pleased that Graham Hancock, who is a best-selling author, over 5 million books, who has written a lot about, everything he writes is great, but he's written a lot about the ancient world and the paranormal to some degree, though he's not limited to that. He's coming in for a very rare appearance, a 90-minute lecture, on ancient exopolitics, we're calling it. And so that's a rare chance to see Graham Hancock in person. And
he
then...
Doesn't, he doesn't live in this
yes.
country, does he? He's coming in
he's
from the UK.
He's United Kingdom.
So this really is a rare chance to meet him, and I have admired his work for years. I was really excited to see him on the speaker list. I wasn't expecting that at all.
He's a brilliant guy. He's just a brilliant man, and
he
just never go wrong. Listening to Graham, and then it continues to get good. We have so much has been going on in the United Kingdom the last 4 or 5 months. I mean, those that are following this, it's been news cycle after news cycle, including Edgar Mitchell's appearance on Kerrang Radio, the release of the more UK sighting reports onto their internet website, which generated a lot of news stuff there. And in the middle of it all, there's been Nick Pope, who has been on the news extensively, including getting an op-ed editorial into the New York Times. Nick is coming over again. It's the second time at the X conference for a full 90-minute lecture. And so Nick Pope, who, of course, ran the UFO desk for the MOD in UK for many, many years, is a great guy, and I'm glad to have him. So that's another special presentation. And then the final, I guess you could say, special presentation, and they're all special. Mm-hmm. But these are the ones I'm highlighting a little bit because these are the opportunities that people may have less of a chance to catch in terms of other venues. But the final one, which is also on Sunday, will be a 90-minute debate and dialogue, along with some Q&A, back and forth, as well as a few questions from the audience, between myself and Dr. John Alexander, who is one of the most outspoken military intelligence people in this issue. One of the very, very few that have appeared at conferences, given presentations, interacted with many of the researchers at one time or another, oftentimes in the background. Bit of a controversial man, but a highly accomplished man. He actually spoke last year. But he liked the idea that I had mentioned to him, or rather I mentioned during my intro to him, about having a debate. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. 90 minutes and everything's on the table. Nothing is going to be off limits. So that will be on Sunday.
Now, will that be recorded, Steve? I know last year some of the presentations were not.
Only one, and that was John. It was a book issue, but it turned out not to be an issue. But no, everything will be recorded this time.
Okay, great.
Everything will be recorded. The DVDs will be on sale by Paranormal Matrix and also by Media. I've forgotten the new name for Ted Strain's operation, but Ted will probably have those up on one of his sites as well. And then in addition, to give me an idea of how extensive this conference is, Colin Andrews is coming down for a 90-minute lecture. He has not lectured for a long time, and he's got a lot to get off his chest, a lot happening in his world, some of the controversial. So Colin Andrews, legendary researcher, of course, in crop circles, will be presenting. And then, with Nick Pope, who a person is going to be sort of appearing with him. He'll be part of the presentation and, of course, available throughout the week to talk with and interview. And by the way, we always welcome documentarists who want to come in to get interviews with speakers for potential future projects. We have two media rooms set up, so any documentarists that want to come in and film, we want you to come in, bring your signed releases and all that. We are very, the X conference has always been documentary favorable. We're always trying to assist there.
That's a fantastic opportunity too, because you've got all these amazing speakers brought in from all over the world. Really, I mean, you've got several coming from the UK, and they're all in one place. It's very easy to have your
media
room and just talk to a bunch of people.
We have two media rooms. Yeah, two media rooms, literally, for people to set up in advance so they can do interviews at will. But as part of Nick Pope's presentation, we are bringing a gentleman up, a wonderful man from Miami. And his name is Dr. Milton Torres, a retired Air Force major. And Milton Torres is important because one of the news events that occurred in the UK was when they dumped out the UK documents, this last dump, which was followed very closely. People looked at it, and they noticed that one particular sighting, or one particular report involving the order of a U.S. pilot to shoot down or shoot at a UFO. And that caught a lot of people's attention. And lo and behold, it was Milton Torres, and he was interviewed. And he indicated that, in fact, yes, it was on my radar, and it was on the base radar, and it was as big as an aircraft carrier, and I didn't shoot at it because it took off at high speed. Milton, when he was interviewed by the press in Miami, was forthright. He'd been quiet about this all these years because he was asked to be, and that was, that's what he was. He was an Air Force guy, and he follows orders. But he's no longer under that restraint, and so he has been very candid about the fact he's pretty sure it was extraterrestrial. So Milton Torres will be there, and I think that's very cool. And then we have Art Campbell is going to be reporting about his research into the Eisenhower events, which, of course, always have been provocative and controversial. But there is a witness involved here named William Kirkland, another military guy, and he is going to be there as part of that presentation. We're bringing that up. And then we have, you know, the exopolitical activist side well covered because of the events developing in Washington, which we'll talk about later in the show, and we talked about before. We're bringing the activists back because the timing is such that it may be very important that they be in Washington this time. And so Alfred Weber will be back. He's, of course, the father of exopolitics. Michael Sala will be there. Paula Harris will be there, coming in from, well, Boulder, but she also represents Italy. And then we have some activist guests who are coming on their own dime to be part of this, which I really appreciate because I can only handle so many speakers. And so we're going to be blessed by Joseph Buckman, a former libertarian candidate that talked about this issue when he was running for Congress, and, of course, Rebecca Hardcastle and Terry Mansfield, who are part of the, what they call the Arizona Mafia, which includes Lynn Kitai, and they're just taking over exopolitics and other activist-related activist movements in Arizona. These are very three very dynamic ladies, and so they will be there. And I'm sure that I'm leaving. Oh yeah, Joe Montaldo, I think. I think you let me know, Joe. He's a internet radio entrepreneur. Yes. He has 350 radio shows.
Programs.
Yeah, he has 350 radio shows. But more importantly, he created an organization from scratch, of course, ICAR, dealing with the abduction, contact, the experience, or issues, and has been dealing with a lot of that. And I'm trying to work that in to my conference, and to the extent that it's appropriate. And I thought Joe was very appropriate. So Joe is going to be giving a lecture on his work and ICAR and a number of things. So we're happy to have Joe there. And we really appreciate the effort that Joe has put into promoting the X Conference on his extensive media empire. And then let's see, I'm going to make sure I didn't leave anybody out.
I just want to mention while you're thinking, for anyone who is new to listening to my show, we didn't say flat out, but Joe Montaldo is actually the producer of this show and several of the others on Paranormal Radio Network. He's also the host of his own show, UFO Undercover, which airs currently on Wednesday evenings. He is going to be speaking at the X Conference and also at the Ozark Conference, and he's going to be a guest on Through the Keyhole next week, the 13th. Mm-hmm.
And I want to mention this. Now, I want to be careful here, but I want to mention that I am considering, and if I do this, I'll send something out fairly soon. I'm considering putting out a invite, kind of backdoor invites that would go out to certain people and their groups and their lists, about the possibility of doing something that the International UFO Congress does, that they do it every day of the event. And that's at least one meeting, or possibly two, that would be private, no press, and no really attendees, unless the group agrees to somebody, just a regular attendee coming in, of experiencers, contactees, who could get together in a circle and talk about privately about what they've experienced with some knowledgeable people on site there, and I've talked to several that are interested, Rebecca Hardcastle, mm-hmm. and of course Joe, and there is one other possibility. So I may do this, and it won't be something that's going to be publicized in print or anything. I'll just sort of let the word go out, and if we get enough RSVPs from contactees saying, look, if you have a meeting like that, which will be, you know, time to so that people wouldn't overlap with the conference, but would be off to the side. If I get enough RSVPs by saying, I'm an experiencer contactee, I'd like to be part of that, then we'll hold it. And I should point out that it won't be required that a contactee or experiencer be attending the conference, paid attending the conference to do that. They could just come and go to that meeting. It's just a way to kind of reach out to them. So I might do that. I need to get back to the Bay Area soon and formulate something. But if I do, the word on that will go out about a month ahead of time to the list that would be likely to respond.
Okay. On that note, it's the bottom of the hour, so we do need to take a quick break here. For everyone who's just joined in, you're listening to Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. We're going to take a break right now, and when I return, I'll be coming back to my guest, Stephen Bassett, political activist who's going to be holding his fifth annual X Conference in Gaithersburg, Maryland, about a month from now, April 17th through 19th. Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. We're back, and you're listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest this evening is political activist Stephen Bassett, and we're talking about his upcoming X Conference, which is going to be held in Gettysburg, Maryland, on April 17th through the 19th. And for more information and to register for this conference, go to the website www.x-conference.com. Steve, welcome back.
Glad to be with you again, Karen. While we were on a break, I remembered a speaker, a very important one. It's the other special presentation. There are five.
Yeah.
And that is Dr. Roger Lear.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Lear is probably had more experience in the removal of implants or alleged implants from experiencers than anybody else in the world that I'm aware of, as well as trying to get them analyzed. And he did some of these himself earlier on. He was a podiatric surgeon, but he has surgeons that do it for him now. In any event, there has been a significant breakthrough in his work, which has not been announced yet, and it will be announced really for the first time at the conference. So that's going to be a major event, and there may be some special guests, too, along with that. So that's kind of a big deal, really. So I've covered all the speakers, and now I'll just finish up. As always, on the Monday following the X Conference, and this isn't part of the conference per se, but it is obviously appended to it. On the Monday following the X Conference, Monday morning, almost certainly it'll be 10 a.m., at the National Press Club, we will hold another press conference there. And this time in particular, I anticipate we may have a substantial contingent of media there. For that reason, I have booked the larger First Amendment room, the National Press Club at 14th and F Streets. It's called the First Amendment. I said First Amendment room. And the reason is this. We will be basically announcing that Edgar Mitchell, for the very first time, will be taking questions at the National Press Club on these issues. That Nick Pope will be taking questions on the developments in the UK, all right? And that Milton Torres, who is, had a considerable media cycle there with respect to his experience, will be taking questions. And, of course, Roger Lear will be presenting to the press for the first time the developments in his research. And there may be some other announcements, and we will have lots of other speakers there available for Q&A. This is quite a press conference.
This is huge.
And I will be promoting it, holding it heavily. And the attendees are welcome to come. It is open to the public. And what happens is many of the attendees, what they do is they get up early on Sunday morning, and we all go down via the metro because the metro stop goes right near the press building, National Press Club building. And we attend it, and then most of us come back to the hotel. A few go on from there to the airport. So this is a tradition, and this year I'm quite excited about it. So what can I say? The X Conference 2009 could be the most important one. I know that the economy right now is tough. I know people are uncertain and unsure about where things are going. And I hope that somehow they'll be able to work it out so that they can attend this year and we can have as large a turnout as possible for these speakers, and certainly for the press club on a press conference on Monday.
This one is hugely important. I mean, first of all, the gas prices are dropping, so, you know, I would think that a lot of people would be able to come even if they didn't think they could a few months ago.
But there is that, and the hotel has free parking, unlimited free parking, so there's no charges there.
Fantastic. And it doesn't cost anything to go to the press club.
No, there's no charge for that.
Right.
Yeah.
But this
so
year,
hopefully
I mean,
we'll
we
get
have
the,
a new president who is has seemed to be much more open to discussing this whole question. I mean, he hasn't come right out and said anything, but there have been strong indications that he's a lot more open to this.
Well, this is complicated. All right. Now, a lot of people are writing about the Obama administration, which is fine. And they're writing some strong articles about what they think is going on. And I respect all of these efforts. But I don't necessarily agree with some of the suppositions of these articles, but I know what I have told the audiences that I've been talking to, and I've done an enormous amount of media in the last few months, is this, that based upon a very careful assessment of the entire ramp-up to this election, going all the way back to 2000. And then based upon the events of 1993 to 1996, when Lawrence Rockefeller approached the Democratic administration of Bill Clinton with the intent to convince him to release all documents within government files regarding UFOs, which I can assure your audience would have resulted in the end of the truth embargo forthwith, assuming that the president didn't do that formally himself or his administration. That was a significant event, which is well documented, and we've got the documents, and Grant Cameron had got the most complete set. Other people did get some documents from the Office of Science and Technology Policy where all this took place. Bruce McAbee, for instance, is one. There were a couple others. But Grant Cameron, of course, the researcher that has the Presidential UFO website, presidentialufo.com, he got the largest set. And, of course, I have a full set. We provided some of those to the press, but they haven't really jumped in yet. But on my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org, if you go to the main PRG site, or on the portal page, I think there's a link to the Rockefeller Initiative section, you can literally see the documents, the key ones that we're talking about, as well as, you know, see who the players were and who was involved and who the researchers were. It's quite a page, and it's been up there for some time. So based upon that, I came to the conclusion, and a lot of events that took place in 2002, 3, and 4 involving Podesta and Bill Richardson, the governor of Mexico, vice presidential candidate, vice presidential aspirant and presidential candidate, I came to the conclusion that the Democrats had made a decision to disclose if the opportunity presented itself, which clearly meant they had to win the election. But the indicator, what I needed to see, if in fact that was their intention, what I needed to see was who were the appointees going to be, because that would be critical. Mm-hmm. You don't plan on a move like that and just pick anybody for the various positions that are key to the administration. This is the biggest event in human history, and it will be the biggest political event in human history, and the potential legacy and so forth is almost incalculable. So naturally, we were very attuned. Who are they going to pick? And keep in mind that Obama obviously came into the office with not only a substantial victory in the election, but a huge political capital and popularity. So he might have been young, like John Kennedy, but he was no lightweight, and I can assure you that he could pretty much have anybody he wanted, with the possible exception of some Republicans that might not just be able to be part of the administration. Could pick anybody. And every intellectual, every heavy hitter in the country would have loved to be in that administration. So with the entire intellectual spectrum really available to him, politically, academically, if he were to pick a group of people which seemed to be very much in tune with this assumption, that would be a priori, a very powerful indicator. It's far less powerful to simply have somebody do a bunch of stuff and then look at it after the fact and go, well, that connects and this connects and that connects. But when you kind of predict in advance, if you can kind of assess in advance who you think ought to be involved, and then those people get involved or brought in, that's far more powerful as an indicator. All right? Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, what happened starting on November or the 5th, the day after the election, was astounding. All right? Mm-hmm. You with me?
Yep.
Ken, okay. The line seemed a little dead there. No problem.
Oh.
And I've said this before, but it can't be said too many times, Karen. For those out there that care and are trying to pay attention, because there's a lot of conflicting information, there's a lot of very intense opinions about this going both ways, believe me, and it's going to get more intense, particularly on the Internet where, you know, you can say anything you want, write anything you want, flame away. First and foremost, he picks John Podesta to be the head of his transition team. There were two co-chairs, but Podesta was clearly the lead chair. And Podesta, well, is linked to the UFO issue because, one, he was the key advisor to Clinton during the Rockefeller Initiative, 93 and 96. He was tasked by Clinton to try to respond to it without getting in directly in the UFO issue through improving the declassification, speeding up the declassification of documents and more openness. and other things that Clinton tried to do in response to the initiative. And of course, he watched the whole thing go on from the White House. And so, and then more importantly, in 2002 and 2003, John Podesta could go see one of the statements he made. He made two, but only one of them is on the internet, where he calls for the release of all UFO documents and indicates that the public have a right to know this, without going right out and saying, "Oh yeah, the ETs are real." But in a significant statement by a man of that power, a man who went on to be the chief of staff for Bill Clinton in his second term, and there he is, helping to make the decisions of who's going to be in the administration.
Yeah, that's amazingly exciting to see that sort of thing come out. I mean, here's someone who's talking exactly about what you've been talking about, which is just ending the secrecy, releasing.
But it gets better. It gets better, Karen, because John Podesta, his post-Clinton life essentially culminated when he founded the Center for American Progress, which is the leftist center think tank down in Washington, D.C., progressive think tank. And that think tank is backed by a number of people, but the principal backer is George Soros, the billionaire. And George Soros' number one issue has been for decades is open, transparent government. And everybody knows that open, transparent government has been part of the administration's platform and mantra from the get-go. And so now you have open, transparent government. You've got Podesta running the transition team, and he's called for the release of all UFO documents twice in 2002-2003. So that was pretty phenomenal. I'm going, whoa. Right? That seems to confirm my supposition that the Democrats have made plans to disclose. And then, what does he do next? He appoints Bill Richardson to be the Secretary of Commerce. A very significant post, by the way, with respect to a lot of issues. A lot of people don't realize how many pies Commerce has their thumb in, right? But it's substantial, all right? So, and of course, everybody knows Bill, most people know Bill Richardson, of course, the governor of Mexico, who came out in a book forward in 2004 saying that the Roswell explanation by the government did not add up and called for the release of documents exactly as Podesta had done. And he was planning to run for president and did it anyway. And then he's appointed to Commerce. Now, we know later he had to withdraw because of a pay-for-play investigation that probably is not going to implicate him, but it wasn't wrapped up and they just could not afford the hearing problems that was created.
Want a website, but you're not sure where to start? Honestat lets anyone create a professional-looking website.
Not sure where that's coming from.
Well, we've got a little overlap here. I'm ready to buy a homestead right now. So that was phenomenal. I'm going, whoa, two out of two, right? And then he does something even more remarkable. He selects Hillary Clinton to be his Secretary of State. Now, Richardson was almost certainly aware of the Rockefeller Initiative. He was in Congress at the time, heavily connected to the Clintons, and it's likely he knew about the Rockefeller Initiative back in that period, 93 and 96. Okay. Now Obama turns around and picks Hillary Clinton to be the Secretary of State. Now, a lot of people don't realize what went on there. Again, all I do is watch the news. I have no other life. I just watch the news. So I sort of do. And let me tell you, many, many people didn't think she would take that job. Her position in the Senate was very powerful. She probably could have been Senate leader without any problem. And she would have a substantial platform on which to operate without having to get into all of the problems that being a cabinet member posed. And lo and behold, she goes and takes the job. And let me add something else. It cost the Clintons roughly somewhere in the range of $20 to $30 million for her to take that job. All right. Now, how is that?
Yeah.
Let me explain.
How is that?
She had a substantial campaign debt, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, something like that, which she would normally have continued to raise funds through her list. To raise more money to pay it off. Or, under the rules, Obama's campaign team could have raised the money and paid it off for her. However, when she took the state job, none of that was possible anymore, and she had to pay for it out of her own money.
Oh, wow.
But
no
furthermore, in the deal that was cut so she could take the state job, Bill Clinton had to agree to no more paid international speaking engagements. Estimated income loss over the first 4 years of the administration, $15 to $20 million, right? And probably had to curtail some of his national speaking engagements. And so who knows how much we're talking about, but even more so, President Clinton, had to release the names of all the funders to his library, which he had told his funders that he wasn't going to do. They gave up an enormous amount for her to be the Secretary of State. Now, but of course, why would she do that? Well, I have my own view, but one thing we do know for sure, my view may be wrong, but one thing I know is a fact, that of course, she was in the White House along with Bill Clinton and John Podesta, watching the Rockefeller Initiative go on all those 3 years over at OSTP. And more importantly, we have the documents to indicate she was involved in it. This is the effort by a billionaire, of one of the most famous families in the world, to get Bill Clinton to dump all the documents out and effectively become the disclosure president. She was there watching the whole thing, was involved based on documents we have in our possession and are up on the Internet right now, but has never been asked about it because the press has given her a pass so far. So now we've got her at state, and I understand her job at state, if disclosure were to take place, would be to sort of interface with all of the nations out there and explain what our intentions were and what was going on and our plans and so forth, an extremely important role. And so as a member of the administration, as opposed to being a member of the Senate, the disclosure legacy, if it goes down, as I think it will, she will get a substantial piece of that. And by extension, her husband will as well, thus sort of grandfathering him in, based upon, of course, the Rockefeller Initiative events of 93 to 96 in his administration. So here we are, we're 3 for 3, right? And on these key positions, and I'm going, this is just phenomenal. So then, 2 more positions were picked after that, and they were very notable for different reasons. The crown jewel of the disclosure event for the American people and for the world's people, it's not just simply OETs are here. Most people already know that. A lot of people already know that. But the crown jewel is that the end of the truth embargo would very likely make it possible for finally the technology, whatever we have learned from ET technology gathered from vehicles that we have gotten in our possession by whatever means and been able to study in completely secret facilities for decades with unlimited funding, would become available for development to deal with the human problems and environmental issues and everything else. I mean, it could change everything. It could transform the world, which, of course, would be a huge benefit to any administration that brings that tech out. And that technology, obviously, it's obvious that technology is essentially a new physics. The antigravitic ability, the incredible speeds, the energy output of whatever system is in there is a brand new physics. Which will take us to another place. And so, guess what? Instead of appointing a typical administrator type or politician, I mean, Clinton appointed Bill Richardson, who was simply a member of Congress, the Secretary of Energy. It's a typical choice. What does Obama do? He selects a Nobel Prize physicist, Stephen Chu, to be the Secretary of Energy. Very interesting. And then he follows that up with, who does he appoint to be the head of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the office that Lawrence Rockefeller approached in 93. It was headed by Dr. John Gibbons. He picks another physicist, plasma physics, John Holdren, Harvard, who also happens to have a specialty in energy and alternative energy. These are almost perfect picks if disclosure and ET tech are in the offing, all right? And so now I'm really going, this is just too much, right? I mean, this is like drawing to an inside straight 5 times in a row and hitting it.
Right.
But then the piece de resistance comes recently with the selection of the CIA director. He selects Leon Panetta. Now, that surprised a lot of people, all right? Leon Panetta is a politician. He is not a CIA guy. He's never had intelligence background, really, in direct. I think he might have been in some committees. A lot of people were shocked by that, and some felt that maybe the CIA insiders would be unhappy. He's a competent man, well-respected. But they picked him for the head of the CIA. I think he's already been confirmed. So people might say, well, where's the connection, Steve, to Leon Panetta? And the kinds of things you're talking about. Well, here's the connection. You see, John Podesta was a key advisor to Clinton during the Rockefeller Initiative, 93 to 96, in the White House, watching it all go on. He went on to become the chief of staff in the second term, right, which started, obviously, in January of 1997. Who was the chief of staff during the Rockefeller Initiative in the White House, handling everything coming in and out of the president and fully aware of everything going on that has to do with the White House and the executive branch? It was Leon Panetta who was the chief of staff. And so you now have four people, Podesta, Richardson, Clinton, and Panetta, that all were aware of the Rockefeller Initiative. Two have spoken out on the ET issue, 2002, 2004. This is beyond the pale. This is extraordinary. But there's one other aspect to this administrative team that needs to be noted, which also was predictable. And then we'll go to the break, and I'll get into this a little further. But one of the key aspects of a disclosure event and post-disclosure is that the military intelligence, of course, has been managing this issue at some level or another, some cross-agency committee or another, for decades. Is obviously very concerned about the national security implications and the foreign response and everything that could affect our security because of this maneuver, this event, and they need and expect a president who they respect, who they feel has the intelligence and also the appreciation for the military and intelligence community, so that they have his ear or her ear. And can have their concerns dealt with. So who he selects for certain national security positions is very important. If he picks some ultra-leftist, this is not good. And in fact, the needs of this national security cross-agency committees are such that, you know, certain presidents were not acceptable to them. Bill Clinton was not acceptable to them as a disclosure president, flat out. And some people may be shocked, maybe not, to know that George Bush was not acceptable to them as a disclosure president, in my opinion. My assessment.
George Bush Senior or Junior?
George W. Bush.
But, okay.
However, George H. W. Bush would have been.
I was startled when you said that, because I would have thought the father would be.
No.
Okay.
No, and we can go into that later. But Hillary Clinton would have been, John McCain would have been, and so is Obama. So let me finish with this before we go to break. So who does he? What does he do in the national security area? Does he appoint people that would placate? Assure them. I mean, he's already made many statements about national security in Afghanistan and Iraq that I think provided some comfort and assurance to the military intelligence part of this world. But who would he pick? Would he go left? Would he get very political? No. He did exactly what you would expect. He leaves Gates, who's quite respected at the Department of Defense, who had been in the Bush administration. He then brings in a pretty tough guy, James, who was the former Marine Commandant, to be his national security advisor. In other words, no Condoleezza Rice, I can assure you of that. Mm-hmm. And he puts Admiral Blair as the national intelligence chief. I think I've got that right, but it's a key position. And Blair is a very strong guy. So he did exactly what you would expect him to do. And so the upshot is that everything I am seeing tells me that their plan to disclose is right on track, barring some sort of dramatic intervention. And we can go into this maybe further or whatever else you want to talk about after the break.
It is time to take a break. I didn't want to cut you off because I was just fascinated by that. But we do need to take about a 5-minute break here. You're listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. My guest this evening is Steve Bassett, political activist and host of the X Conference, which is coming up next month in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and you're listening to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and on UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest this evening is political activist Stephen Bassett. He is also the host of the upcoming X Conference, which will be held in Gaithersburg, Maryland, on April 17th through the 19th. For more information and to register for the conference, you can go to www.x-conference.com. Steve, we were talking a little bit about some of the speakers that you have coming in for the X Conference, one of whom is Edgar Mitchell, who is, for anybody who doesn't know, was one of the gentlemen who actually walked on the moon, and he's had quite a lot to say about UFOs and about similar experiences over the years. But it seems like he's been largely ignored by the press.
Well, it's more complicated than that, Karen. Edgar has been telling his fundamental story of his intersection with the issue for years, going back to 97. That was, again, things were still very much up in the air then. I don't think the formal efforts to sort of interfere with our activities ended until about 99. I think up until then they were doing things from time to time to sort of muck up the works, you know, like putting sugar in the gas tank, that kind of stuff. But Edgar has been out there, and of course he's been repeated it, so it just sort of got shuffled off to the side. Well, that's just Edgar saying giving his opinion, all right. And he wasn't someone who was seeking. I mean, he wasn't out there beating a drum to get the press to come see him. He felt, look, I'm telling what I know, and if they want to come talk to me, come talk to me. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. However, don't underestimate the power of Edgar Mitchell here. He's a very significant person of the 20th century, and he's very formidable man. And so what happened was he went over to do an interview in London on Kerrang Radio with Nick Margerison. And really, you know, it's kind of a cool hip station owned by Bauer Consumer, big German company. And the fact is, when he did that show, and they got into his contacts and told him that the UFO issue was real and Roswell happened, really, for most of the audience of that show, they'd been hearing it for the first time. So it was news to them and to a lot of the UK media. And more importantly, Kerrang Radio put out a press release thereafter, the after-the-show press release, a rare event. And because Bauer Consumer is a pretty big company in Europe, that press release got read, and so a huge news cycle was launched, right, in Europe, which did work its way back to the U.S. And it was a significant news cycle, which I chronicled very closely. So if you go to the ParadigmResearchGroup.org website, you go into the PRG, you scroll on down the center area, you'll eventually see an archive of that news cycle, which is not absolutely complete, but it's pretty good. And you'll see about 50 articles that were written about, mainstream news articles written about covering the Mitchell's comments in Kerrang Radio, and, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, 12 media interviews that he gave on television about it. And I should let you know that Edgar told me that because his secretary was sick and not available, I think, during that very period, he just was overwhelmed. He did not respond to over 200 other media requests. So you get an idea how much latent power exists in this issue when the press gets a handle on it, and he handed them one there, and he's not done. Dr. Mitchell, I believe, now is fully formally committed, in my opinion, to getting the truth to the American people. He wants this embargo over. Whatever that truth is, he wants it out. He is not happy that after all of these years, we are still subject to this kind of repression of information of this magnitude. So I think you're going to see more of Edgar Mitchell. And, of course, we're so pleased that he's coming to the conference. And let me also mention, if I could, Karen, you know, I've been talking about this whole issue with the Obama administration for some time. But I honestly don't think I have ever stated it as cleanly with respect to what has happened and the selection of the administration and so forth as I did in that last segment. So I hope you archive that and get it out there, because I don't think I can say it any better than that. Right?
Well, Joe Montaldo actually does a fabulous job getting these shows archived, and they're usually posted within half an hour of the time we finish the show.
Good. I will get a link up to this as soon as possible on my site and put it into a update, the next up TRG update, because I think that kind of lays it out, I think, as well as I can do that. So the upshot, of course, is that we are seeing increasing signs that something is going on. Now, there's a lot of other indicators. I'm getting, you know, emails and this and that and calls from people that are saying this is happening, that's happening, and boy, it looks interesting. I mean, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of foaming going on out there. There's a lot of activity which you can't quite point at and say specifically, oh, yeah, this is disclosure-related, but it just sort of indicates something is happening. There's something going on here that we don't fully understand, but is big. And the energy level, the UFO community, has increased dramatically. You can feel it. It was intense at the IUFOC Congress conference. You could feel the energy in the conference of the people there. They sense something is going on. All well and good. All right. And so the upshot of all this, the punchline to all this, is this, and this is what I have been message I'm trying to get out as often as I can, because I am an activist. I'm not a chronicler, right? I'm just not standing around taking notes. I'm not a journalist to simply write up something. Here's what happened. I'm an activist. We're part of a movement trying to actually make something happen, change a very important government policy that could have enormous implications worldwide. And so the message is this. If the Democrats, as I believe, have made a decision that if the time is right, the circumstances are right, to finally end this truth embargo and acknowledge that we are, in fact, not alone in this universe, the best time to do it is the month of April, from April 1 to April 30. Now, I'm not picking that month because my ex-conference is there, believe me. Though it is an interesting coincidence.
And, because of income tax day, right?
Well, yes, it's a couple days after income tax day. People have already finished, and so now they can relax. You know, they've given all their money to the IRS. Now they come to my conference. But it's just a coincidence. But here is why. If you were the new administration and you were going to make this maneuver, which is hugely implicative, you really must do it early. It's not a complicated equation. If you wait 8 months, a year, two, whatever, 3 years, then it's your embargo. You're the one. You know, it's like knowing who murdered your neighbor, right? And then sitting on that information for a couple of years. Well, the police will be a little bit antsy about that. You know, why didn't you tell us who murdered your neighbor, you know, 2 years ago? So, I mean, the longer they sit on it, the more it becomes their embargo. And so now they have that problem. Meaning, why didn't you tell us sooner? On the other hand, if they act expeditiously, then it's all good. It's like, oh, well, we found out, we looked at it, we made an assessment, we're telling you the truth. Open, transparent government. And everybody's going, oh, hallelujah. No downside, all upside, at least for the administration, the top level. And then they have the whole rest of their term to address the issue. This is fairly straightforward. But they can't do it on day one. He was going to do it January the 21st, right? I mean, obviously, it would be ridiculous. They have some immediate legislation that has to be passed. They've got some serious crisis to address immediately. They've got to get settled in. They've got to make the appropriate contacts. They have to get at least reasonably comfortable before they make a maneuver of that magnitude. So you give them 70 days. Now, I'm using this 100-day thing because it's arbitrary in a way, but as we know, it's become kind of part of our political culture that the first 100 days of any new administration, brand new now, not second term, is like that magic time. Big honeymoon, huge political capital, popularity, all of these things. And so if you make big moves, that's the time to do it. And so for that reason, I peg that first 100 days as the target. And then as for the reasons I mentioned, I think they need about 70 days to get things at least in order and settled in and comfortable. Therefore, that, I guess, leaves you 30 days. Those last 30 days of that first 100 is your window of opportunity. I believe the biggest window that we've seen since ever, maybe even going back to the 40s, to finally end this truth embargo and move on as a civilization. And that 30 days happens to precisely coincide with the month of April, April 1st to April 30. Now, I think we can safely say they're not going to do it on April 1st. I think that's a pretty good guess. So I guess we're really talking about the last 29 days, but you get my point.
Close enough.
So that's what it all comes down to.
Wow.
And then here is the activist punchline to this whole scenario that we're talking about, and that's this. And this is a message that I am trying to convey to the administration in my humble way. I will be sending, you know, I've got open letters out there that already talk about this. I will be sending congressional alerts about this in time. There'll be press releases, whatever. The message is really not particularly complicated, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's this. If the administration does not take advantage of this April window and end this truth embargo, acknowledge the ET presence, and hopefully begin the process of bringing the technology we believe, many believe, that they have into the domain, the public domain, for our needs as a human race. If they do not do it in April, I can tell them that the activist pressure on them is going to increase several fold. We have the documents, we have the media moving, coming around, we have the websites, we have the access to the media. We are going to be relentless, and it ain't going to get comfortable at all right, for them. But more importantly, and this is the real punchline, two punchlines, this is the one they had really better pay attention to. And I'm talking about the president, his chief of staff, right, Mr. Rahm Emanuel, and of course Secretary Clinton, Secretary Chu, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's this. If they do not take advantage of this window, I don't care what's going on, I don't care who's blowing up what, I don't care who's invading who, whatever's going on,
there's always blowing something.
Right. If they don't take advantage of this window, sometime this year, they're going to get up, right, to go to work, and they get up early, right, 5:30 in the morning. They're going to get up, and they're going to have a little coffee, and then before they get that limo to go into the office, they're going to go out, and they're going to pick up the Washington Post on their doorstep. And when they open it, the headline is going to be something like this. French President Sarkozy announces today in a press conference in Paris that the French government is fully aware of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race and has made the decision to inform their people. That's what they're going to read in the newspaper. And if it isn't, then it'll be the premier of China, right?
Yeah.
Or any number of other countries. There are several other possibilities, all right? And that headline is going to knock them back on their heels big time. Because what that means is the greatest political legacy of all time just went to another nation, and we're playing catch-up. We've got egg on our face. We kept this truth embargoed for 62 years, and it took another nation to get it out to the people. America will take a massive hit in terms of its political prestige, its open, transparent government prestige, and so forth. The cost is incalculable. Now, if it happens, it happens, right? This isn't about America. I mean, we are a major player in this, but this is, you know, the ETs didn't come here just to hang out in Canton, Ohio. They're engaging the entire planet and the human race for Lord knows how many years. So, if it's France, it's France. If it's China, it's China. Canada, the UK, whatever. I'm just letting them know the options here. And they can decide what they're going to do. But that's the long and the short of it. If somebody has a better explanation for what's going on, if somebody can make the case that none of this adds up, I'm more than happy to hear them out. Let them come on a show with me or something and make the opposing case. But that's what I see. I'm not a prophet. I'm not predicting anything here. I mean, I'm not prophesizing anything. I'm making a guesstimate. I'm making a prediction in the sense that I believe the window is opening, and there's a possibility, a good possibility, we could see this event. I'm not guaranteeing it. That's why it's very important that the people jump in right now and do everything they can to keep the pressure on the government to go where I think it wants to go. But as we know, governments get cold feet really fast. Well, it's amazing how fast heat can get cold in Washington, D.C. Boy, it doesn't take much. And so after the break, we'll talk about the things that your audience and all of Joe's audience within his massive media empire could do to ensure that the scenario we've been talking about, in fact, comes to pass.
And with that, your timing is impeccable, Steve. It is time to cut to a break. And we're going to be away for about 4 minutes this time, so don't anybody go too far, because when we come back, I do have a couple of questions for Steve Bassett, political activist and host of the X Conference, about some of the things he's just been discussing. This is Through the Keyhole, live on Paranormal Radio Network and UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. We'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome back to Through the Keyhole on the Paranormal Radio Network and UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan, and my guest this evening is political activist and conference host, Stephen Bassett. His X Conference is going to be coming up in about a month. It will be held April 17th through the 19th in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is right outside Washington, D.C. The focus of this conference is pretty much government cover-up. We're asking government insiders to come out with evidence, with any information that they have, and to call for disclosure of any information relating to UFOs that the government is keeping hidden. Steve, before we went to break, you were talking about how members of the government do want to come out and release this information, but that the government in general, as an entity, gets cold feet and relies on public opinion. I wanted to ask you about a project that you were initiating last fall, your Million Facts on Washington project, which was trying to let the government know that we do want to hear about UFOs, that public opinion is with them in terms of...
I want to do that. We'll definitely talk about it, but I want to clarify some here, Karen.
Okay.
And wait, it's not your fault or anything, but I want to... certain things have to be very clear.
Okay, I misinterpreted something. Let's see.
No, that's okay. No, that's all right. Let me make it clear. Paradigm Research Group doesn't publicly call for witnesses to, quote, come forward, right? I don't do that. I certainly talk in it about witnesses coming forward and everything else, but you don't see me putting out stuff saying, if you're in the government, come on out. They will come out, but I don't call for it. And the reason, of course, is that in many cases, it's conceivable that people are, in fact, violating the law if they were to do that. And some of those laws are pretty heavy laws. And so I never wanted to put PRG in the position where it's encouraging someone to break the law to do this. That is a personal decision, right,
okay,
that they have to make based on their thing. So I want to be real clear about that.
Yes.
But witnesses are out, when they've gotten involved, what I'm trying to do is to try to increase their, once they're out and they're dealing it, like other conferences, I'm trying to increase their public profile. And highlight them, and also bring them to Washington, right, close to where the action is. And so in that way, PRG is certainly trying to advance the witness issue, and there are many organizations that are advancing the witness issue. I think you know about them. You've interviewed them. Now, to get to your question, and this is critical. What PRG is doing, Paradigm Research Group is doing, to help keep that pressure on at this absolute critical time, are a number of things. But let me make it clear that there are plenty of activist organizations out there, disclosure movement organizations, right? Obviously, that's their actual political, because disclosure is totally a political process, that are doing stuff too. Plenty is going on, not just Paradigm Research Group. Now, if somebody wants to get a larger picture of that, all they have to do is go and Google or Yahoo exopolitics, that one word, exopolitics, right? Exopolitics. And hey, guess what? In Google, you get about 200,000 pages returns, and in Yahoo, it's 800,000 pages. Now that's notable. Look, if you go Google the word, golf, or even a general kind of term, you get huge numbers of pages. But of course, a lot of terms will have many multiple uses, right? Mm-hmm. It would turn up in all kinds of places. Exopolitics is not yet in the dictionary, not the formal dictionary. It only has one context, and that's the UFO ET context. So if Yahoo returns 800,000 pages, that's 800,000 pages addressing exopolitics in the context of the UFO ET issue. And so when you get those returns, you can browse them, and you'll start seeing the other organizations and things that are going on. You get a picture of how large this movement is getting. But with respect to PRG specifically, all right, the projects that I initiated, two of the key ones, to get the pressure on, is the first is a million facts on Washington, which we talked about. Two phases. Phase one, all right, is was designed to go from November the 5th to January the 20th. This is the transition period. And we posted up on the factsonwashington.org, factsonwashington.org webpage, and also the Million Facts on Washington Facebook group page, all the information for sending emails and letters. Fax numbers were never really available. To the senatorial office of Barack Obama, and then the transition headquarters for Barack Obama. And a lot of this went through his very well done and advanced website, change.gov. And many thousands of letters and emails went in, right, to the transition. And I've gotten copied on many, and we're slowly putting up, we have about 70, it'll be a lot more up on the factsonwashington.org website. You can see examples of these letters, they're pretty cool. Now, phase two started January 21 until, and again, I chose that 100 days, until April 30. In other words, the first 100 days of the administration. And of course, I'm now promoting, and will continue to heavily promote, actually more promotion coming up than already, for more letters, faxes, and emails to go now to, obviously, the White House. And what's great now is that this is the White House, and so they have an address, and they have a fax number. It's published. They have an email page on the White House website. So you can get all of that in, all three, without any problem, and it gets even better because in addition to that, there's a comment line. You can actually leave a comment about this. Now, don't just leave a comment on a comment line. That stuff disappears into the ether. The faxes and the letters are important because there's a record. They're material. They hang around. But if you want to add a comment, do it on the line. So we're trying to get as many into the White House between now and April 30 as possible. And there's no limit, you know. I mean, it could be tens of hundreds of thousands. How many people really care enough to tell the president, you know, we want you to do this. And the message, and when you go to the factsonwashington.org website and you go to the Facebook group page, Million Facts on Washington, you get information, you get some ideas of what to highlight. We don't provide some automatic script because that dilutes the power of such an effort. By the way, this is not a petition effort. This is a letter fax effort, right? Mm-hmm. You write it, you send it. But the key points are, one, demand and get a full briefing on this issue from the military intelligence community. And if they refuse to give it to you, fire them and get somebody that will. Two, call for congressional hearings. Encourage congressional hearings to start taking all the testimony as possible. Three, disclose. Actually execute the disclosure maneuver and announce the ET presence to the world. And four, as soon as possible, which won't be long once the disclosure takes place, let's start getting that technology into play. We need it. We need it now. So this is the ET tech and whatever we've done with it into play. This is the key messages. And so that is underway. And we will get as many much correspondence into the White House as the American people are willing to generate. All right? Now, the other project that is going very well is that a while ago, I don't know, it's been a year maybe a little longer, PRG set up the Exopolitics World Network. And it set up the Exopolitics United States Network. But let's talk about the Exopolitics World Network. The idea was to create a group of websites, one per country, with basically the same type URL, similar URL, exopoliticsunitedstates.us, exopoliticsspain.sp, and so forth, right? And with, sometimes it's a little different because there are certain rules regarding URLs in different countries. And then they would all have the similar name, Exopolitics Spain, Exopolitics France, Exopolitics Germany. And we've got about 13 sites up. And then these sites would kind of, that would be the EBN site in that country. And, of course, you could link to any other site that wanted to and track exopolitics in that country and also any developments in, you know, other countries. And those sites have come along very well, and we hope to get more very soon. The idea was to create a very strong networked presence on the Google and Yahoo returns, which is, you know, let's face it, what Yahoo and Google return virtually drives us these days, if you know what I mean. And so the difference between turning up on the top return page for some search on Google as opposed to the eighth page is like, I don't know, 98% to 2% or something in terms of effectiveness. And so we're already getting, when you get up the first like 50 pages or so, most of these country sites are turning right up there. So that was the idea, create this cyber network demonstrating a worldwide developing exopolitical presence for the disclosure movement. Now, that's going along okay. We need more country sites. Now, let's get about 30. However, just last week on February 25th, as a result of a meeting held, I think we had two. I think you may have attended one of them at the Laughlin Conference amongst most of the political leaders and activists in the field, the media people and so forth. I was persuaded to do something, which I really should have figured out anyway. But when you really brainstorm with people, you can get in some ideas you normally wouldn't get on your own. And that's this: to go ahead and do something I had planned to do, which is to go ahead and set up a Facebook page, group page now, not a friend page, but a group page for the ExoPolitics World Network. But rather than it just be PRG's page for EWN with me as the administrator, what we decided to do is to create this page and design it to service the entire exopolitical activist community worldwide. Now, how does that work? It's real simple. First of all, the page is set up, and all of the leaders that were there and others, I'm sure, will be coming on board, have agreed that they're going to start funneling, right, and promoting this page so that more and more of the people that they're in contact with them are going to go and join up that group page if they're already in Facebook, or join Facebook and join up with the group page. So we can build the number of people that are attached to that page as rapidly as possible. And then, more importantly, and this is based on how Facebook works, the various leaders of the movement, the disclosure movement, and some media people will be designated as administrators. And so this group page will eventually have 15, 20, 25 administrators, all key people in the disclosure movement. And because of the way it works, any one of them at any time, if they have a message about a conference, a book, an appearance, an event, ongoing news, whatever, they can send a message to everybody that belongs to that group page. Any one of them can. Now, why is that incredible? I'll tell you why it's incredible. There's no upper limit, virtually, to how many people can belong to a group page on Facebook. I think Obama had a couple of pages. One had 2.5 million people. And so if you're an administrator to the ExoPolitics World Net group page, and you need to send an important message, And that group has 500,000 members, you can send that message to all 500,000 at once for zero cost. It's done by Facebook through their server. In other words, that if we can build up the ExoPolitics World Network group page on Facebook to huge numbers, we will have a massive contact list that we've never had before, accessible to all of the key disclosure activists and media people. It could be a million. There is no upper limit to it. And so, essentially, it services the whole community. This has the potential to be unbelievably powerful. It could be ourmoveon.org, right? Or pick a right-wing group, right?
Oh, right,
It would be our power center.
Yeah, that's just moving into a whole new realm of spreading information. It's really exciting.
We're using the latest. I mean, Facebook is growing exponentially. It's up to 175 million worldwide. It could be at 300 or 400 million by the end of this year. And the friends page are fine. You have your friends, 200, 300, 400. But you can only communicate with your friends in Facebook. You can't communicate with people who aren't your friends. You can only see their picture. So there's groupings and overlapping groupings of friends. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about their group pages, which are created for organizations, causes, and what have you. Right? These are open to everybody. And if you belong to that page, the administrator of that page can send you information. So people that join there have to expect to get a lot of information in real time about what's going on with respect to the disclosure process, the exopolitical process, and everything else. And they're going to be in the loop, but they've got to join. Now, the beauty is, look, it's not spam. If they don't like what they're hearing, they can just discontinue, just cut, delete themselves from the group page. It all stops. Mm-hmm. Later on, they want to get on, they just join up again. Right, it's not like an email list in that sense.
Right. And joining isn't like filling out a form and submitting a lot of information. You just click on something, right?
I'm pretty sure you have to belong to Facebook, but you don't have to create some big friends page. You just create a Facebook presence.
Yeah, all you do
is
you click
on
that group and you're in. You've joined.
And then you're in, right? So you don't have to have all your photos and stuff. Just join Facebook, put up the basic info, boom, go over, join the group. You don't have to provide any information to the group, per se. Though if you have a photo up, it will show your photo if you post a link or post a photo, which people can, to that page. So this is the kind of stuff we're doing. We're coming together, not on the mall in Washington, D.C. We're coming together in cyberspace, and our numbers are going to grow. And the United States government must understand that to prolong this truth embargo is to potentially do great damage to what is already a significant damaged social contract in America, where the confidence and trust in the American government, what Obama has done so far aside, we'll see how that goes, it's been shattered and ripped and torn. They can't afford to make any more blunder. Let me rephrase that. They can't afford to continue policies like this. That's what Obama's saying. We cannot afford to continue secret government, secret policies, secret meetings, secret this, secret that, secret everything. And the public finds out after the fact, after the savings loan is business has collapsed, after the hedge fund business has collapsed, the banks have collapsed, you know, after some war has been started. We can't have the people then finding out what's going on. It just cannot do it any longer. And I know that I believe Obama wants that. He's certainly indicating it, right? But we'll see. The American people, though, don't have to wait. They can state what they want right now. And so I encourage people, please, join the ExoPolitics World Network group page on Facebook as soon as you can and tell all your friends so you can get the information. Two, if you can come to the X conference, this could be huge. I mean, look, if disclosure gets real close, the X conference is going to be like on fire. I mean, it's going to be nuclear reactive. So it might be a cool time to come. Three, please, Google ExoPolitics and just try, get a look at just how broad this movement is getting. How many initiatives, projects, organizations, websites are surrounding it. Now, understand, ufology is still going on. You can still find all kinds of, Google UFO. You can find UFO sites, reporting sites and research sites for all over. There's thousands of them. I mean, they're there, too. They're going away. But the ExoPolitics thing is here to stay, and hopefully the ExoPolitics, the movement within it, the disclosure movement within ExoPolitics, will finally resolve this issue. So I'm going to leave you all with that. I've got to go. I'm going to let you kind of maybe take some questions from the audience, but I've got to leave right now. ParadigmResearchGroup.org, x-conference.com, SacsOnWashington.org, and the ExoPolitics World Network group page on Facebook. This is what I'm doing. It's the best I'm doing. My colleagues are doing 22, and you can learn about that. And I'll be back, because the best is yet to come. We're just getting rolling here. This thing is going to get resolved in 2009. All right?
All right. Thanks so much,
Karen,
for joining
so
me,
much.
Steve. And I just want to
I
let you know we set a record for listeners tonight. I've got close to 80,000 people listening live tonight. So.
I am very pleased. You are getting, every time I talk to you, you're better and better as a host.
Thank you.
You're coming on strong. You're going to be an important person in this field, Karen. I'm looking forward to seeing that happen. And let's get together again real soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right, dear.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Have a great evening. And I just want to mention before we wrap it up completely here, I didn't get a chance to go over this with Steve, but I can just tell you this. I just went to look up the registration information for the X conference if anyone's considering going, and I really think you should strongly consider it if you're interested in this field at all. This year, 2009, is going to be a super important year politically and in terms of the disclosure movement, which Steve really is a champion of this movement and this whole exopolitics field. Things are going to be big this year. You need to come to this conference and talk to people. Go to the website, www.x-conference.com. You can find registration information. I'm looking at it right now. It's about $300 for the entire weekend. In fact, just under $300. If you book your hotel, it's at the Hilton Gaithersburg, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. Do book that through the website. You'll get a much better rate that way. You'll get the conference rate if you go through it. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining me. Had a great time talking with Steve Bassett. I hope you had as much fun listening as I did. You're listening to Through the Keyhole on Paranormal Radio Network and UPRN 105.3 FM in New Orleans. I'm your host, Karen Dolan. I have really missed being on the air the last couple of weeks. I've been out of town at another UFO conference, the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. It is great to be back. Next few weeks, I've got some more new shows scheduled, so no more repeats for a little while. So don't go away. Talk to me next week. Right now, stay tuned for Portal coming up next. See you next time.
About everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, you've got to listen to ICAR, that's International Community for Alien Research, www.icar1.com. I should know, I'm Irish.
Hi, I'm Gia Scott. I'm the host of this really cool little radio program on Tuesday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. It's called The Dawn of Shades. I bring in a wide variety of guests, and we talk about all sorts of things. Some of them are authors, some of them are experiencers, but it's all paranormal. Do tune in to The Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays, and you can always catch our guest list at www.giascott.com.
Hello, this is Trish Sheridan for UFO Global Focus. Starting Sunday, November 18th, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network will be broadcasting our new program. Each UFO Global Focus show, airing Sundays 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, will center on a particular international and study aspect of ufology. We hope you'll listen and join the discussion.
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host, Charles Giuliani, Mondays, 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts. Ignorance kills.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We'll go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Portal Paranormal Talk Radio with hosts Tuesday Miles and Angela Thomas invite you each week to join into their show. Your chance to talk about ghosts, paranormal research, psychics, and much more. For more information, visit their website at www.portaltalkradio.com. Portal Paranormal Talk Radio on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Do you want to dive into the bizarre world of the paranormal? Do ghosts, UFOs, or the supernatural amaze you to the point of wanting to learn more? Well then, you need BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. With more than 1,200 hours of on-demand talk radio, syndicated from more than 35 shows, the Black Vault Radio Network is your one-stop shop for the world of the unexplained. Check us out and tune in 24 hours a day at www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, that's www.blackvaultradio.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
3:30 in the morning, not a soul in sight. The city's looking like a ghost town on a moonless summer night. Raindrops on the windshield, there's a storm moving in. He's heading back from somewhere that he never should have been. And the thunder rolls. Every light is burning in a house across town. She's pacing by the telephone in her faded flannel gown, asking for a miracle, hoping she's not right, praying against the weather that's kept him out all night. And the thunder rolls. The thunder rolls and the lightning strikes. Another love grows cold on a sleepless night. As the storm goes all out of control, deep in her heart, the thunder. Waiting by the window when he pulls into the drive. She rushes out to hold him, thankful he's alive. But all the wind and rain, a strange new perfume blows, and the lightning flashes in her eyes, and he knows that she knows. And the thunder rolls. And the thunder rolls. The thunder rolls and the lightning strikes. Another love grows cold on a sleepless night. As the storm goes on out of control, deep in the heart, the thunder.
You are listening to the Paranormal Radio Network.
Yeah.